All right, welcome back to Radio Wasteland, the best in paranormal talk radio. I'm your host, Chauncey Hallworth. This is my co-host, Kara Kittrick.
Hello.
Kara, do you have any news for us today?
Yes, I do. So a North Carolina man spotted a Bigfoot recently while taking out his trash. The man, not the Bigfoot. He looked toward a nearby wooded area and observed a six-foot-tall shaggy creature with, quote, the biggest feet he ever saw. He was later interviewed by the local Cryptozoology and Paranormal Museum on video. It's worth a watch. He appears visibly uncomfortable with what he saw, perhaps even terrified. The sighting took place in Littleton. In more cryptid news, video evidence of Mothman surfaced last week in Phoenix, Arizona. A blurry humanoid shape with an ill-defined head and wings was spotted rotating slowly in the sky in one video. Another video, also from the same region, came out shortly thereafter. Although skeptics proposed that the objects were balloons, specifically Buzz Lightyear balloons, wind data would appear to contradict this, according to MUFON, as the objects were moving against the wind. These sightings are far from conclusive evidence of anything, as they were shot from so far away. Moreover, the thing, whatever it was, didn't appear to be moving its limbs or wings. It was just floating. Although this is consistent with many winged humanoid sightings. These were investigated by MUFON and are still considered inconclusive. And finally, an analysis of the makeup of coronavirus published in the scientific journal Nature Medicine indicates that the novel coronavirus was very unlikely to have been created in a laboratory. Apparently, COVID-19's transmissibility is the result of a particular structure that conventional genomics would have predicted to make it less efficient. Spreading, not more. Therefore, it's unlikely that human researchers would have tried to engineer this particular strain in this way. COVID-19 is 96% identical to a coronavirus found in bats in nature, apart from a mutation of surface proteins. The original cause of this mutation is, of course, unknown, but could have occurred in nature. The analysis also concluded, strangely enough, that the virus did not originate in a fish market in Wuhan, as many believe, but likely developed much earlier than that. And finally, a grim milestone passed last week as the U.S. now has more confirmed coronavirus cases than any other country on Earth, and also we have almost lost more people to the virus than to 9/11. Right-wing pundits, including Tom Fitton, president of Judicial Watch, Bill Mitchell of Your Voice America, and of course QAnon, have sprung into action in response to this milestone, accusing Anthony Fauci of being a deep state operative hell-bent on taking down the president. Your country thanks you, right-wing pundits. Back to you, Chauncey.
All right. You know, it's good to see a Bigfoot sighting back in there. You know, it's... We've been so dominated with coronavirus and aliens and stuff like that. It's good to see.
Yeah, it's pretty hard to find non-coronavirus news these days, unfortunately.
Right. I wonder if Bigfoot is susceptible to coronavirus. Are we close enough genetically to make that happen, or?
Well, a lot of people, you know, the guests we've had on have proposed that Bigfoot is some sort of alien-human hybrid, so.
That was our most recent, yeah.
I think they would propose that, you know, Bigfoot might have inherited extraterrestrial, you know, resistance to disease.
And, you
highly
know,
advanced creatures.
While Bigfoot started, you know, out here, Pacific Northwest, stuff like that, it seems like the bulk of the sightings have moved to the south or the north-south.
Yeah, I think, you know, you could get that impression, but I think it's not necessarily there are more sightings here, but that news outlets in the South are much more likely to report on Bigfoot than up here. I think that's the driving factor.
Well, for all you people out
there,
For all you people out there insisting on getting your news from the BBC because you think it's more accurate, you might think about tuning in to the North Carolina local news.
Exactly. You will never get the, you know, the straight scoop on Bigfoot listening to the BBC.
No. Although later tonight, that might not be the case, and we'll talk about why at the end of our news segment here. It's nice to see some more Mothman in there, too, although a little
always
disappointing
nice.
When you said it was Buzz Lightyear.
Well, people proposed it was Buzz Lightyear, but like I said,
why
it doesn't
specifically Buzz Light, you know?
Well, because of the wings, right?
I see.
It could have been like the Buzz Lightyear jetpack situation.
Right.
That's why people sort of proposed that, and I can see it, and in fact I would just believe it, except for the wind thing. It's weird that it was like moving against the wind somehow, which I don't know, maybe our wind data isn't perfect. Maybe it was just a balloon, but
who knows? To Point Pleasant and beyond.
Indeed. Yeah, and this is Phoenix, Arizona.
All right, yeah. And then Corona, you know, how are you holding up with this coronavirus being stuck in your house? It's kind of a natural state for you.
Yeah, I don't understand your question.
Yeah, it's kind of a natural state for me too, you know. But I can see it in the people around me. My wife's starting to go a little batty. She wants out, you know, but I don't know. It's good to know that it's unlikely that it was created by governments, but of course this is the government telling us that, so I don't think that's going to sway QAnon.
Okay, but it isn't the government telling us that. It's a nature term.
It's big money people, big money nature. Big nature, man. Big nature mags.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think these guys are paid that much.
We can trust them.
I understand you. If trustworthiness is determined based on, you know, the level of, if it has like an inverse relationship to the amount of money you make,
right,
then yes, we can trust. Although by that logic, we're the most trustworthy people ever.
Well, let me preface what I'm going to say with, you know, I am no huge believer in governments, nor am I a huge believer in taking down every corporation that ever existed. But I do think it's a little weird that these people are automatically jumping to governments killing their own people. I personally, if I was going to go with anything, I would say, you know, Disney Plus wanted to solidify their their memberships or something like that. You know, Netflix knew that they were dying, so they released it. You know, I would totally lean towards corporations before I lean towards.
So you're more in the cyberpunk arena.
Yeah, yeah. Probably,
you're more in
probably.
The evil corpse. Yeah. I mean, that's fair. I think corporations are evil by nature. I don't think corporations are very good at keeping secrets or doing things, you know, with sort of a long-term plan.
Right.
So that's the only reason I don't believe that. I don't think that's really how they do things, nor do they need to.
They're really good at manipulating crackpots, so.
Oh, true.
You know.
Yeah. We wish we were as good at manipulating crackpots.
Working on it. Just fixing the format, you know, making some better intro songs, you know, and crackpots will be ours. And in Crackpot Fodder tonight, we have, we referenced it a little bit earlier, we have Andy McGrath talking about the beasts of Britain. This is going to be all about cryptids from the world's sixth largest island. So that's a little bit of a weird place for cryptids to be, you know, a little landlocked, little thing. But now they got the channel, so maybe there's a French Bigfoot coming through.
We don't think you're a crackpot, Andy. You're crackpot bait. Crucial distinction.
Yeah, that's what I meant with crackpot fodder.
No, I'm just clearing it up.
This is our offering to the crackpots. But no, I actually, I really enjoy Andy and some really interesting.
You don't hear about British Bigfoot.
Yeah, deeper takes on stuff we already knew was going on. So I like it when we get to dive deep. You're listening to Radio Wasteland. Come on back.
The Reading Civic Auditorium brings a wide variety of shows to the North State. Go to readingcivic.com and join their mailing list for free. Get early access to tickets and first dibs on the best seats in the house. grab a drink with friends at the fully stocked bar or locally roasted coffee, snacks, and other beverages at the River Rock Cafe. Enjoy lidded beverages throughout the auditorium at every show. If you want to know about the best concerts coming to the North State, go to RedingCivic.com to learn more.
We all had friends and family that were affected by the car fire. Most of the cleanup is done now, and a lot of families are looking at rebuilding. If you relied on a well for your water system, it's important to assess the condition of your well and its capabilities to be able to meet the demands of new construction codes. I'm Ted Ogilvie with Diamond Core Drilling. We've been providing water well systems and pumps in Northern California since 1980. Let us help you with your rebuilding process. That's Diamond Core Drilling, 275-8162.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts Wayne Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archives link.
ACA, come out and play. Have you seen the bill we all have to pay? The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson State of Mind.
Every Monday from 6 to 8 p.m., join us at Radio Wasteland, your local guide to the unexplained and the unknown. Each week, we cover all things unexplained, from the moving stars in the sky to the things that go bump in the night. Visit us as we explore these topics and more as our in-studio team digs deeper with featured guests and listener call-ins. Mondays are rough, but now your overworked brain has a chance for some sweet relief with Radio Wasteland.
Radio Wasteland, Mondays at 6 on KCNR.
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
Radio Wasteland comes to you from the Reading studios of Free Fire Radio, 96.5 FM and AM 1460. Visit Radio Wasteland at Instagram at instagram.com/radiowasteland.
Welcome back to Radio Wasteland and our guest, Andy McGrath, all the way from late night England for us, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And tonight we're going to be talking to Andy about Beasts of Britain. You know, this this topic, I think Carrie will...
It's a new one for us.
It's a new one, and I think Carrie will very much agree that this one is tapping into two of my loves, one of which, of course, is cryptids, monsters, mysteries, and then the other is sort of the history of Britain, because, you know, with...
Yes. We got Beast and we got Britain, so...
Well, you know, I mean, I grew up reading things. King Arthur and battling worms and, you know, all sorts of that stuff, and sure. I'm wondering how many parallels there are between these two things, you know? But let's start out, Andy, by asking you, you know, other than being geographically located in the heart of this, you know... What really made you say, like, hey, I'm gonna dig into this here in Britain, you know? What really made you say that?
Well, for me, I've been in love with cryptid creatures since I was a teenager, just quite a long time ago now. And, you know, the usual things, Nessie, Paddy, Bigfoot, Sasquatch, all those things, Killian Bimby, and I just... started searching around in my own country to see if there was a bit more than just, you know, the late monster stories going on. I had an American friend actually quite a few years back, and he's kind of taunting me and saying, look, what have you guys got? You know, you've got Nessie and that's it. That's the whole bag. And I knew there was a bit more than that, but I didn't know there was so much more. And I started searching around and I thought, you know, maybe I'll turn this into a, like a little TV series or a blog or something. And a friend who worked in TV advised I should make it into a book. And I just started writing it foolishly thinking, I'll just write a book then. And that's how I do most things. Just sort of jump in and get involved and hope that I can come out the other side with the product that I've been boasting about creating all the way through. Mm-hmm. And I did.
So in the book, you know, you kind of break up cryptids into categories like beasts of the water, the woods, the air.
Yeah.
I really like that sort of breakup. You know, so maybe let's run with that. You know, beasts of the water. Of course, we know Loch Ness, and there are others. You know, when I think of England, of course, I think of a lot of ocean water. But are we talking oceans, lakes, the whole nine yards?
Lakes rivers? And lochs, coast as well. I mean, there's lots of coastal sightings. They're not as frequent as sightings in Loch Ness, but there's a reason for that. 250 to 300,000 people a year go to Loch Ness.
Are looking, yeah.
And point their cameras at the camera, their cameras at the water. And that's just a reason to have more sightings, really, I think. Apart from Loch Ness, on the Scottish side, there's Loch Morar, which is the next loch that has the most sightings. It's actually the deepest loch in Scotland, Loch Morar, although it's not as big as Loch Ness. And it has some fantastic sightings there. Now, you have to remember, this Scotland is really, really underpopulated. Even Loch Ness being one of the busier areas of the Highlands, I think the most populated village around Loch Ness is Fort Augustus, which has 600 residents.
Oh, really?
So this is, I mean, it's next to nothing.
Right.
Really, really next to nothing. 1.9% of Scotland's entire landmass has urban sprawl in it. So that's, it's just an area with nobody living there. So, Loch Morar, I'll just tell you about that first. It's 1,017 feet deep. It's, unlike Loch Ness, it's not tainted with peaty stained brown water, so it's very clear. You can see quite far into the loch. The River Morar, it stretches, I think it's 8 miles down to the sea. There is a little hydro dam in the way, but you know, an amphibious animal could get around that. They do get seals in there from time to time. And there has been sightings there going back to about 1887.
When you say sightings, are you saying sightings of something similar to the Loch Ness Monster?
Almost exactly the same.
Really?
So just dealing with those Nessie-type sightings. Mm-hmm. It's got, you know, it's a number of names as well, just like Nessie. It's got the plesiosaurid description. Sometimes it's said to have some humps, whale-like black or dark brown mottled skin, snake-like head, measuring somewhere between 20 to 40 feet long. There were some very interesting sightings I'll tell you about, mainly the very, very famous ones. So there was a factory boss, Alistair McKellick, of Mullaig in Inverness. He was fishing with a group in a boat, and they saw Morag about 50 yards away, three humps moving through the water with the head underwater. They said they were left astounded, fearful about how close it had been to them. He then saw it was his daughter and some, excuse me, some guests at a local hotel saw the same thing from a greater distance. But you know, they say a lot of people are embarrassed to describe in that area that they've seen anything in the loch. One of my favorite ones, actually, because there's a great sketch that goes with it, was from 1975 when two brothers, Charles and Donald Simpson, were driving towards Brack Arena. It's a small village there on a birdwatching expedition. They were driving along the Morar River as it leaves the loch, and it flows over a narrow ridge of gravel for a short distance, where it's just a couple of feet deep. It's about 3 p.m. in the afternoon, and they saw suddenly a 20-foot-long animal rise out of the water about 40 feet from their car, lurch across the gravel bar and sink into the deeper waters of the loch. They said it had smooth brown skin like a drum, and they commented they had very developed muscles on its powerful hindquarters, which were unmistakable as it hauled itself over the gravel bar. They didn't see any ears or eyes, but said there was something that looked like a trunk trailing along the back of the body, which could have been a tail, I guess. And there's a great watercolor painting of that that was done under Donald's supervision by a neighbor. Now, there are many sightings in that area. Adrian Shine himself from the Loch Ness Exhibition Center, who's been researching the Loch Ness Monster for 60 years, Loch Ness and Loch Morar were his two primary research locations. Now, for me, the best sighting in this area was by Robert Duff, a joiner from Edinburgh, because it's the clearest sighting. He saw it on the 8th of July, 1969. He was fishing from a boat in Moby Bay on the southern shore. The water was no more than 16 feet deep and crystal clear, and he spotted a monster lizard lying motionless on the loch's white leaf-strewn bottom, looking up at him. He estimated it was 20 feet long, with a snake-like earless head, slit eyes, and a wide mouth. Body was grey-brown with rough skin, and four limbs with three toes visible on each front foot, plus a tail. He was so unnerved by the creature that he left the area immediately.
I don't blame him.
Yes. I mean, we're in 16 feet of water in a fishing boat. I mean, it can't be very, very solid. When you're on those lochs, and I've been on Loch Ness a few times, not so much the other lochs, the feeling of the depth beneath you is really, it really gets you, especially if it's a little dark, you know, a little lonely out there sometimes. You can feel that depth of the water. I think Loch Ness is 750 feet deep points. Loch Morar is 1,015 feet deep. And
unfortunately,
really
I don't have anything in my mind. I don't have anything in my mind for comparison there, but I have heard that they are just insanely deep for what they
yes.
are.
Really, really deep. I mean, it's basically, if you were to sink and drown, you wouldn't be found for a very long time to come.
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
Welcome to the Year of the Bear, Black Bear Diner's year-long 25th anniversary celebration. Black Bear Diner first started serving up bear-sized portions of family favorites in 1995, and they are marketing this milestone with a year of tasty specials, fun celebrations, and a continued commitment to give back to the community. Stay tuned and be sure to stop by the Black Bear Diner on Hilltop Drive in Cypress and Redding all year long, and help us celebrate 25 years of
Black Bear Diner.
Hi, this is Mark from Haven Humane Society. It has been a challenging couple of years, and through it all, our amazing team has continued to save lives. We have so many fantastic animals that are looking for their forever homes, and with adoption fees so low, now is the time to add to your family. With puppies, kittens, dogs, cats, and so many more, we have the perfect addition. Come join our team as a volunteer and help in an area that works for you. Walking dogs, socializing cats, helping our veterinary hospital, or folding laundry. We have many opportunities and welcome all volunteers. For more information, please visit our website at havenhumane.org or follow us on Facebook. On behalf of the entire Haven team, thank you for all of your continued support as together we get closer every day to North State with no more homeless pets.
The value of banking local comes in being able to walk into the lobby, see the president, and be called by your first name. Knowing that lending decisions are made locally by people you call neighbor or serve alongside when supporting a worthy cause. There's confidence in knowing that when you place your trust in Cornerstone Community Bank, you not only help yourself, you support the town you call home. Stop by one of our Redding or Red Bluff branches or visit us online at bankcornerstone.com. Cornerstone Community Bank. We invite you to experience how we are moving local dreams forward.
For many people, their faith, their family, and their health are the most important things in their lives. Every day, the work that I do influences these things. Children go to college, couples move into their first home, people retire, businesses start, and charities are supported. All of this in part because of the work I do. I can make complicated things clearer so people understand them. I can solve problems and find solutions. People need someone to put their interests first. And for many people, I am that someone. I can lend an ear, stand with you during life's ups and downs, and provide that advice at just the right time. That's why I love my job. That's why I'm a financial advisor, Susan Eastman, with Wells Fargo Advisors in Redding, California, 243-7561. Once again, this is Susan Eastman with Wells Fargo Advisors. I'd love to be your financial advisor. Please give me a call at 243-7561.
You're listening to Chauncey and Kara on Radio Wasteland right here on 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. That's Free Fire Radio. And don't forget to follow Radio Wasteland on Facebook at facebook.com/radiowasteland.us. You are listening to Andy McGrath here on Radio Wasteland discussing the beasts of Britain.
What are beasts of the woods? You know, where would you start with this?
I would start with the British Bigfoot, a highly contested and very, very inflammatory area of cryptozoology at the moment. I mean, it's I'm both intrigued by it and very invested in it, in the research about it. I was with a lot of the main people who were involved in the research, like Neil Young and Deborah Hatwell and all those other guys. It's, how can I put it? There's over 500 sightings reported. Really? They're on, Deborah Hatwell has the great map. She's the founder of British Bigfoot Research, her and Adam Bird. They've got a great, great map. She was a witness back in the 80s in a place called Salford near Manchester. And when I first heard about it, I was like, what? Like, Bigfoot, how? This is just, it doesn't make sense. How could that get here? Well, of course, we used to have bears and wolves and all kinds of things. So how did they get here, right? Mm-hmm. And we were once connected to Europe through the Doggerland land bridge, which is an established fact now, with the sunken area between here and our European cousins. Now, it's very interesting. The sightings are compelling. One of the things that really stood out to me about them, and I'll give you some of them in a few moments, was that the witnesses normally didn't say Bigfoot, because that's not really a big phenomenon. Yes, they would say it was a man-monkey, or like a giant orangutan on two legs. Or it was almost like a caveman, but it was covered in hair. Mm. And that, to me, they passed the Bigfoot on the brain test, and they were just looking for somebody to talk to. And people like Deborah and Neil in the early days of this, they were very instrumental in that, in reaching other witnesses and telling them, no, you're not a crazy person. You know, you saw something as well. So I really respect that. So Deborah was really great. She shared a lot of the sightings with me. I got to meet a lot of witnesses and find some new witnesses too. So I'll just give you two of the sightings.
Okay.
That are very compelling. And the first one is in an area near me called Box Hill. I've been there quite frequently. Now, I live just outside of London on the edge of Surrey, which is a county. Very green, lots of areas, AONBs they call them, areas of natural beauty.
Sure.
Beautiful wildlife areas, not a big population. And in 2012, in Surrey, in the area called Box Hill, there's this nice big hill, and it crosses a river that has these beautiful little stepping stones on it, and then it ascends up a hill which has these, it's heavily wooded and has steps, big earthen steps that are hemmed in with wood, and the inclination is about 90 degrees. It's about 700 or 800 feet high, and people run up it, crazy people.
Right.
Not me. I take a walk up it when I go there. But if I can, I try to get a car to the top and walk down. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so this was near the stepping stones, near the bottom of the stairs in 2012, late evening, summer, so it was still light. And the witness was running up the steps leading to Box Hill on the North Downs in Surrey. Now, during the training session, she'd heard what she believed to be, now believed to be wood knocking. She didn't know what it was. She just heard knocks mm-hmm. on wood. And she'd finished the training. She sat down to have an energy drink on the steps. And just to describe to you the way they move these steps, they're heavily wood, and they kind of curve around down the hill. So there's lots of blind corners. And 25 minutes later, she's still sitting there, and she hears footsteps coming down the hill, and thinking it was a dog walker or something like that, she just moved out of the way and expected somebody to pass her. Nobody did. An unsettled feeling, and then she could hear breathing, felt that she was being watched, and she turned around and looked over her right shoulder, stood 10 meters back behind her and up the steps to her right side. What she thought was a sort of ape, brown in color, patches of gray all over it, a very human face with a flat nose and a very wide jaw, kind of out of proportion to the size of the head. The head was domed at the top, which stood out to me, still on two legs, but appeared to slump forward slightly. Very thick built, of solid muscle. And she said actually that it was frightening, the strength of it, the build. She guessed the height was 6 foot plus, but she wasn't sure. It stood staring at her for about 30 seconds before turning around and walking off, still watching her. As it left, she could smell a stale farm animal type smell that lingered. Now, isn't that strange?
Yes.
That smell.
Yeah.
She didn't know about the smell, but she had the experience.
That's a very classic Bigfoot sighting. Mm. Just down to the details. That's very much like the type of Bigfoot sightings you get in the, you know, in the States and the Pacific Northwest. So that's interesting.
Yeah, domed head, everything. Yeah.
Yeah, and the smell. But,
again, does she say, I saw a Bigfoot? No, I thought it was some sort of ape. She doesn't even know the word. It's those sightings, they really stand out to me. We have a lot of sightings just like that. There's no, the word Bigfoot does not come into it at any point. Because again, it's not a big thing here.
Well, we're, you know, in the story, we're seeing a lot of parallels to Bigfoot. But in these sighting stories, are there a lot of is there anything that stands out as being uniquely different? Because let's say, you know, there's a lot of people who think a lot of different things about what Bigfoot is, from anything from an animal to an interdimensional traveler. We just had a guest on talking about that. Mm-hmm. But is there anything that uniquely stands out as being separate of?
Obviously, the British Bigfoot is, you know, much more reserved, prefers tea to coffee. But,
right.
But apart from that.
Right.
Takes milk with his tea.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah, so is it pretty much verbatim? It's always so similar?
I mean, the descriptions vary in the way that we talked about earlier, based upon the person's own mental comparative library of animals they can pick things out of. Generally speaking, they tend to be described as either upright chimpanzees, orangutans, cavemen, or large apes on 2 feet. It's kind of strange the way that occurs time and time again. The face, actually, in many cases, is described as being almost caveman-like. A lot of them say that. But with this very wide, jutting jaw, and of course, the hairiness is another aspect that seems to stick out. Now, there was a sighting, actually, that differs from that slightly. Now, one of the things that also I was going to say is it tends to be smaller than the American Sasquatch. The top height I've received from anybody is 8 feet. And even that, I think, was overblown because of shock. You know, I think sometimes something that might seem 8 feet to your mind is maybe around, you know, top of 6 or early 7 feet tall. So most of our sightings seem to be between about 5 and 8 feet at the top. No bigger at all. Now, I'll just give you another one just to throw it out there. There's a great sighting that was actually made by a primate keeper of 37 years. And he worked at a very famous zoo here. I won't name the zoo, but he worked there for a long time. He was actually nearly beaten to death by a chimp, actually, in his time there, and was retired early because of it. And he and his brother, they used to love going to Scotland and wild camping, because it's not illegal to wild camp. They can just camp wherever you want. And they would take small arms and egg and some things and shoot rabbits and sort of live off the land a little bit for a week or so. So again, in 2012, he and his brother, they were up in a rural part of Scotland in a place called Abernethy Forest in Strathspey in the Scottish Highlands. Not really too far as the crow flies from Loch Ness, and the part of the old Caledonian forest that used to go across the whole part of that country. They got up early to hunt first light, and they made their way to the rabbit field, as they were calling it, to hunt and get some breakfast. As they got close to the tree line, they headed out off towards a huge blackberry bush that they'd noticed the night before. And he was being careful, but he kept his brother behind him because he had a very heavy footfall. And after a few steps, he can't hear his brother anymore. And he turns around and sees this astonished, shocked look on his face. His mouth is open, his eyes are, staring past him off to the blackberry bush. And he looks over, and what he sees there is a dark figure crouching down with his back to him, about 50 feet away. He said, crouched down, it seemed to be about 5'2". It looked like it was eating berries on the bush, and its shoulders were moving in that kind of way. It raises its head a little, obviously hears them, turns slightly towards them, and then tilts to one side as if listening. Then stands up and turns and looks at them. Now, he said it must have been 7 to 8 feet tall, covered in jet black hair all over its body, except for the upper chest and face. Skin was very dark, except for its bottom lip, which looked pink. It had a wide nose and large eyes, but its features reminded him of an older bonobo chimpanzee, but with a much flatter face.
I'm Chuck Kenny with Shasta Gas Propane and Shasta Tanks. Many people may not know that we started a propane tank refurbishing business about 5 years ago. We pick up tanks from various propane companies, bring them to our yard in Anderson, where we blast the old paint and rust off, repaint them with a very durable paint, and then install new valves. The tank is just like a new tank. We primarily sell these tanks in truckloads of 45 to other propane companies. I'm telling you about our new business because many of you are installing generators because of the probability of the power being shut off this summer. Shasta Gas Propane now sells standby generators and propane tanks so that you won't be left without power. Give us a call at 365-3793 so we can come to your house and give you a quote on a generator and tank. Again, that's 365-3793.
A jewel of the North State, a place we love to go and love being members.
The view, the best in the North State, from the restaurants, meeting rooms, and of course on the award-winning 18-hole golf course, Riverview Golf and Country Club. It's the place to belong.
Go in and meet the friendly staff today or go to their website at riverviewgolf.net and find out about their introductory memberships.
Riverview Golf and Country Club, corporate, social, tennis, fitness, and golf. Get it all. Become a member.
It's affordable and fun. Riverview Golf and Country Club.
We are Women of Vision.
Hi, I'm Haley Clandenning.
And I'm Maurice Brown.
Join us for the Women of Vision show Tuesday nights from 6 to 7.
Women of Vision is a movement, women empowering women, locally and globally. We connect female professionals and entrepreneurs and encourage women to collaborate and achieve their personal and professional goals.
With a spirit of integrity and excellence, we will motivate you to thrive, activating your unique ability. Join us Tuesday nights from 6 to 7 on KCNR 96.5 FM.
Where do you go in Shasta County to get advice on the best type of firearm to meet your needs and how to safely carry and use it? The answer is to join the revolution at locally owned Bastiani Arms. Bastiani Arms believes in a better way to serve their customers and providing them with all the information needed to make the right decisions before and after the sale. They have a large selection of guns and ammunition and always special discounts for veterans. Self-protection is your right. Join the revolution at Bastiani Arms, 2539 Larkspur Lane in Reading, 222-8222.
Hi, I'm Sharon Clark of Home Helpers. It's amazing to look back at all the families we've touched since 2004. But our clients say it best.
I want to express my deep appreciation for the love and support you and your...
So fortunate to have an organization like Home Helpers.
You never know how much your contribution meant or how greatly you touched our lives.
Thank you so much for helping me care for my husband.
After hearing what it's meant to them, I truly can't imagine doing anything else. When you need help for your loved one, choose Home Helpers. There is no place like home.
You're listening to Free Fire Radio, 96.5 FM, 1460 AM. You're listening to Radio Wasteland with Chauncey and Kara. Find all our shows and archives by visiting Radio Wasteland at radiowasteland.us. You are listening to Andy McGrath here on Radio Wasteland discussing the beasts of Britain.
Before we run out of time, let's move on to beasts of the air. Kara has suspicions that some of these are going to go in the realm of flying serpents. Let's see what you bring into the table. You know,
okay.
When you think of beasts of the air, what's the first thing that you think? Here in North America, you know, I think we think of Thunderbirds probably as the first beast of the air.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Maybe Mothman, maybe some other sightings like that.
The Jersey Devil, that kind of thing.
What comes to you first?
Well, in the UK, the most famous beast of the air is the Owl Man of Mornin. Or the Death Raptor, as it's nicknamed now. It's very interesting.
This sounds amazing.
I've seen a lot of comparisons between this and Mothman, so continue.
You know what? I think there are a lot of similarities between the presentation, at least some of the witness sketches. Now, Owl Man of Mornin was first reported in the 1970s. It comes from a place... called Mornin, and it was first sighted in Mornin Old Church in Cornwall. Cornwall's in the far southwest of England. Cornwall's actually an old Celtic country. It has its own language. which is almost extinct now. But it's a very old, very rural place full of lots of myths and folklore and history and things like that. And that seems to my mind, have an effect on the locals as well. But this was first seen by two children who were aged 9 and 12. They claimed to have seen a birdman hovering above the Tower of Mourne and Old Church in Cornwall. The young girls were understood to have run away and reported it to the police. Whilst at the police station, they were taken to separate rooms to give their statements. And allegedly, and you can see the sketches online, sketched exactly the same creature. And they were holidaying in the area, and they and their families left shortly afterwards. Another sighting of this creature occurred when several witnesses saw a large man-like owl sitting on a large branch of a pine tree. They thought somebody was playing a prank on them until the creature flew off. Now, curiously, and this has happened a few times, apparently, they claimed to hear a crackling sound like static electricity as it was leaving. There have been other sightings over the years around the churchyard involving people usually seeing red lights floating over the church roof. The descriptions of the creature, it's 5 to 6 feet tall. It's a grey-brown owl with red glowing eyes, a wingspan 10 feet across, with pincer-like talons. And it's said to emit a screeching or a hissing noise.
And so, the body, is the body humanoid or owl-oid?
It's upright.
Avianoid.
It's upright. But I don't, it could be humanoid, but I'm wondering if the upright nature of an owl anyway is led to that humanoid description, whereas in fact it was just large and upright. Mm-hmm. It's not really described very well. I've always wondered if it was an eagle owl or something, just a very, very large eagle owl seen by, I mean, they're not from this country, but they are sighted here now and again, seen by very surprised people who weren't expecting to see that kind of creature. I don't know, but the red glowing eyes do present a problem.
Right. Where does glowing eyes really exist outside of the ocean?
Why do we have bioluminescent eyes, right? I mean, lots of cryptids reported with them. But then there's the possibility of, lights that they...
Right, like refractive eyes.
Yes.
Lots of animals have this. But
they have that, where it appears to be more red color, right, than white.
Exactly. It is interesting, though, that these sightings are so similar, again, to, you know, the sightings of the Mothman in Pleasant and in Chicago. So if there is a natural explanation, you know, maybe it's something similar in both cases,
but the glowing eyes
are hard to explain.
Specifically in the case of Mothman, there seems to be so much paranormal to it that takes it
half the time out of the
realm of being a cryptid and into the realm of paranormal. You know, in the case of the Owl Man, is there any associated paranormal activity, or is it mainly just cryptid-style sightings?
No, I think they're cryptid-style sightings. The most paranormal aspect of the Owlman, of course, is the collector of that sighting, and who was Tony Doc Shields. You may remember him as the Wizard of the West, the guy who thought he could conjure Nessie and even try to pass off a picture of Nessie head and neck, which is comically nicknamed the Muppet Nessie, from the late
60s. I have not heard of this, but I can tell you that that is what I'm looking into tonight.
You should look up Tony Doc Shields. He was essentially a conjurer, a con man, who traveled around the country with his family, a performing family, doing a very weird show. And, he's actually, I mean, very involved in many cryptozoological organizations here still, and even, I won't say who by, but even vaunted by the head of one of these big associations as a father-like figure, and his greatest influence. So it just goes to show sometimes where the authors of these things, you know, these sightings become tradition and history, but I'm very interested in finding out where they came from sometimes and how it's morphed into fact over time, you know, without looking at the source. It couldn't be very well be true. He was well known at that time for collecting lake monster stories, and he didn't sew in Ireland very much, and other things. He's also allegedly somehow involved in the Morgar picture, which is one of the sea monsters spotted around Cornwall. So who knows? You know, there's a lot tied up in that.
Unfortunately, we're coming up here on the end, and man, yeah. I would love to have you on again so we can dig into some more of these. But
I'd love to. Next time, werewolves and black shooks and trolls, we'll do the whole thing.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. We're going to schedule that immediately. But before we end here, I want to make sure.
That's why people have got to read the book.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that's the deal. Before we leave here, I want to make sure that the audience knows where they can get your hands on your book, Beasts of Britain by Andy McGrath, if you're searching for it. But where do you suggest they go to find this book?
Well, it's on Amazon. So it's on Amazon paperback at all platforms across the world, Kindle, unlimited reading, and also in the lender's library. So if you've got it and you're part of the lending scheme, you can lend it to a friend for free. Read it on unlimited for free. I've made it as cheap as possible, so I do want people to have it. It's not, you know, it's not something that's going to make my career, so I want it to be as cheap as possible so you can have it if you want it. The next one I'm working on will be coming out in the summer, Beasts of North America. That will be the next title. I'm also, if the coronavirus relents and allows me, I will be coming to the U.S. to do some conferences this year through the Corridor 13 agency. And that's Russell Accord from Expedition Bigfoot. That's his agency. So he should be bringing me across. As I say, if the virus relents and allows some of us to travel to your lovely country.
Let's hope it does. All right. So if you're searching for it, you've been listening to Andy McGrath here on Radio Wasteland. The book is called Beast of Britain. And be sure to look it up. Once again, his name was Andy McGrath. Thank you, Andy, very much for being on the show. Man, I hope to have you on again because we barely got down the list. Mystery of big cats, trolls, werewolves, shucks. There are so many other things that we could hit, and I hope we get to hit them again.
Thank you both so much for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
News from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.